Hello and welcome to another episode of Sacktown Talks, the first episode that will be airing in 2021. Today, we're very happy to be joined by Assemblywoman Laura Friedman. Laura, thanks for joining the show. How's it going?
Going just fine. Thanks for having me.
Hey, our pleasure. Our pleasure. Laura, in doing a little background on this show, you know, I just did a basic Google on your name and I found out that before you were in politics, you were actually a bit in the movie business. And
that's
you
right.
Happened to work with the Olsen twins. Is that right?
That's right. I produced, I was the executive producer on a feature film they did.
And you worked on another film that I liked as a kid, Zeus and Roxanne. Is that right?
That's right. I produced that film as well.
Oh my God. I never knew this. You know, we always, you know, like talking with, you know, Henry Stern, because his dad's is, you know, always in these great movies that we loved when we were kids. But, you know, that you were the one member. I had no idea that you were in the movie business before. So that's fascinating.
I may be the only member who has that kind of a film background, you know, having worked in the industry. What's that?
How was it working with the twins back in the early 90s?
Good. They were very young at the time. And they were either still on Full House or they had just come off of the show. So when we shot in the streets of New York, which part of the film was shot on location, I just remember that there were, you know, grown-ups yelling, "Michelle, Michelle," who was the name of the character.
Right.
And I remember thinking these girls are maybe 10 years old, 12 years old. And it must have been terrifying at that age to have, you know, adults kind of trying to get at them and talk to them and calling them by their character name. I think it's really challenging for little kids. They do a better job now, even then, which was, you know, 20 years ago, I think, 15 years ago, maybe. 20 years ago, they didn't have as many protections for little kids in the industry as they do now. And I think it was challenging for them, but they were wonderful. They were really good little actresses. In fact, they were so good at remembering their lines and being actresses that we added dialogue for them. We weren't sure how they would do with dialogue, but we were able to add dialogue. And they actually did some ad-libbing during the filming. And they were very, very professional, even at a very young age.
Yeah, you know, a lot of us forget like how popular they were like in the 90s. And I guess a lot of childhood stars back in, you know, the 90s, you know, you don't quite see that kind of level of fame anymore with kids,
yep.
Which, you know, might be a good thing, as you kind of just pointed out. So what made you leave the movie business and get into politics?
Well, it was a long, slow disentanglement, as it is for many people. But over the years that I was in the industry, and I was in the film industry for maybe 20, 25 years. And I went into it right out of college. I mean, my first job was maybe a month after I graduated. I went right to work for a producer who was an Oscar-winning producer in New York City. And after working for 4 years in New York, I moved to Los Angeles for a job at Paramount Pictures. So the industry just changed a lot over the years. And there was a lot of conflation and a lot less jobs. And the further up you go, you know, Hollywood very much like a big pyramid. The bottom, there's a lot of jobs, but the higher up you get, there's less and less jobs. And at a certain point, I decided to try to go off on my own as an independent manager and producer. And it was just very difficult to do that. Really a hard time for independent film, a hard time to kind of have my own shingle like that. And I did it for a couple of years, but just slowly started to transition to doing my own business, you know, a different kind of business in antiques and decorative arts, because I love design. And then I got involved in local politics, and that ended up taking a lot of my focus. And then running for the assembly, which was completely unexpected. I mean, I came out here to be in the film industry. I never gave much thought to politics, and I still don't watch MSNBC or news shows. I'm not a political junkie. I don't focus on that. I was very interested in my own community and making things better in my own city, in my own, you know, area. And that's what got me into it.
Wow, interesting. Fascinating. Well, we're glad to have you up here. And, you know, exciting news. You've just been, you know, named recently the chair of the Transportation Committee. I know to the joy of many folks in the environmental community. So congratulations and kind of,
thank you.
I guess, can you talk to us about kind of what that chairmanship means and kind of what you're looking to bring here in the next, you know, session?
Right. So until last week, I was chairing the Natural Resources Committee. And I had thought since I was appointed to that, that was the absolute perfect committee for me, that there was nothing that would encompass as many of my areas of focus in the legislature and my interests in natural resources, because I've got to deal with plastic pollution and air quality and emissions and clean energy and land preservation and wildfire and just a huge range of subjects, all of which are interesting to me, all of which are interesting to my district. But I also felt like natural resources in the assembly had been going in a very good direction before I took over as chair with previous chairs mm-hmm. and with the amazing, excellent professional staff they have. And I felt comfortable given Speaker Rendon's interest in the environment and the fact that he had been director of CLCV at one point, that it would continue to go in a progressive and good direction, even if I was to leave. But transportation has been a very stubborn area for the state with emissions reductions. It's still the one area where it's responsible for the largest amount of greenhouse gas emissions. And yet we've been going in the wrong direction in transportation with regard to emissions. It has a huge bearing on all manner of environmental issues. It has a huge bearing on issues that are in crisis in my district, such as housing. So when I was given the opportunity of maybe moving over to transportation, I just sat back and I thought, as much as I love natural resources, where can I make the biggest difference? Right. And even though it will be frustrating and I know that I'm not going to be able to walk in and wave a magic wand and do everything that I want to do and accomplish everything I want to accomplish, I think there's a bigger battle in the transportation arena that will be more meaningful. And I really felt like it was a chance to make an impact, to push a committee and push a policy area into a very different direction than it had been going in the entire legislature in the past several years. So I see it as a challenge and I see it as a huge opportunity and I'm very excited about it.
You know, I guess this is kind of interesting because anyone who's, you know, been in the cities around your district have been on those freeways, have been stuck in traffic, you know, so it's very fitting that, you know, you being from that area are now helping to solve some of these issues. Kind of, I guess, what are some of the solutions you think are out there to kind of help, you know, alleviate this congestion and, you know, give us a greener, cleaner air future?
Thanks. And I hopefully will have a better answer for you in 6 months after I've had more time to dive into transportation. But I'll just start by saying that when I moved to Los Angeles in the early 90s, I remember when the movie Clueless came out, which is still one of my favorite LA movies. Yeah. And there's a line in Clueless where she's lost in the valley and she has to get to Beverly Hills. And she says, but I'm in the valley. It's going to take me a really long time to get home. And her father says, that's ridiculous. Everything in LA takes 20 minutes. And that used to be true. It used to be that you could drive anywhere in Los Angeles in 20 minutes. Well, we have basically the same road conditions that we did 20 years ago or 15 years ago. And yet the congestion problem has increased, I would say almost exponentially. Now almost nothing takes 20 minutes, much less getting all the way across Los Angeles. And that's because our population has grown. It's grown a lot, and yet we still relied on the single person car to get us around. And even though LA has been making great strides in transit in the past few years with, you know, new light rail and subways, it's nowhere near the pace that it needs to be. And it's nowhere near the kind of use and deployment that it needs to be for us ever to be a true world-class city. And I maintain that LA will never be a world-class city until we have easy mobility options, a safer way to get around, a faster and more convenient way, an equitable and cheaper way to get around town. And that is not everybody driving their car. So we need to do a lot in terms of investing in mass transit options and in safer streets so that we can walk, bike, and use micromobility in a way that's safe. And until we do that, we're never going to solve our housing problem, because the one thing that everybody objects to when there's going to be any kind of housing in their area is traffic. So until we provide those options and show people that we can get people around without them having to drive a car alone by themselves, we're going to struggle with all manner of things. And it's one of the reasons that people now who are moving out to San Bernardino and Riverside and yet continue because of housing costs, but still working in Los Angeles, right, have what are really unbearable commutes that have a serious impact on their quality of life. And anybody who's ever lived in a city where you have wonderful mass transit will tell you that it is a better way to get around. It improves your quality of life when you don't have to think about where you're going to park, when you can read a newspaper or talk to your kids in a fast moving, you know, train car. It makes all the difference in the world. As the same with living in a place that's walkable and bikeable.
No, definitely. You know, I had to make that same decision, you know, driving, you know, 45 minutes each way to work, or, you know, driving five. And, you know, that extra hour and a half you get to spend with your kids is well worth it, and something, you know, everyone should be able to achieve. So yep. You know, wish you good luck on solving these issues and working forward and seeing what you come up with in 6 months. We'll do a progress report, see how you're doing there.
Thanks.
You know, turning back on 2020, you know, it was a session that was pretty interesting in the fact that, you know, it was condensed and, you know, not everyone got to do everything they wanted to do. Kind of looking at your 2020 kind of priorities, kind of what were some of the bills that you were trying to put forward that you were not able to, you know, do anything on that you're, you know, looking to bring back here in 2021?
We're still trying to decide what we're going to bring forward. We're still this year, even though hopefully things will improve and the legislature has a better handle on COVID precautions. We still are in the midst of a huge COVID surge. It's an incredibly contagious and dangerous virus, and we all have to be careful. And we know that we're not going to be able to carry the kind of bill loads that we did pre-COVID this year. So we're still going to have to make a lot of choices about what we want to move. And we have to be willing also for there to be bills that come up that are COVID related that we need to make room for, as we did last year. So one of the bills that I was extremely excited about that we weren't able to bring forward last year, we've reintroduced as AB 43, get it, 43rd district. And it is a bill that looks at ways of making our roads safer for pedestrians and cyclists for through a whole manner of different interventions, including how cities set speed limits and are forced to raise speed limits based on the 85th percentile. And we, a couple of years ago, introduced this bill. We turned it with Chair Frazier's encouragement. We turned it into a bill that set up a task force to look at street safety. We had people, stakeholders from all across the state of California, from rural areas, from urban areas, from law enforcement, from the auto club and the auto industry, you know, just all the safe streets and bicycle advocates from all kinds of people. And they met several times and they listened to experts and they came back with a very comprehensive report about how we can make our roads safer towards the goal of zero traffic fatalities. And so we are going to be trying to institute as many of these as we can in AB 43. And there are a couple of other members who are interested in some of the other recommendations that were in the report that we're not able to do just because of the size of the bill. And that'll be a huge priority of mine, is working on traffic fatalities. You know, during COVID, one of the ironies, the really horrible ironies, is that even though there have been less people driving around, because a lot of people have been home, they haven't been working, they've been remote working, so they're not driving, the traffic fatalities have gone up. And the reason is because there's less cars, and so there's been more speeding. And also there are more people out walking and cycling.
Right.
And trying to get exercise during COVID. So we've led to a situation where we've had a series of really horrific crashes and deaths in my area and I think around the state. So this is something that's an imperative. People are dying. I have a 7-year-old daughter and I'm afraid every time we go out to walk the dog. I live in a neighborhood with no sidewalks. So, yeah. And we have people who speed in an area with no sidewalks and dark streets. And my city has to raise speed limits because of the speed that people choose to drive. And there's something wrong with that. So we need to give municipalities every tool that we can to make their streets safer. And that needs to be a priority. And that will be a priority of mine this year.
No, well deserved. Very interesting. Kind of what were some of the, I guess, findings can you share with us of this task force? Like, for example, I know Sacramento here has really looked into this issue and kind of changed streets around, changed parking around. Kind of what were some of the findings that, you know, the task force came up with, which you think could be implemented?
Well, engineering is certainly important. And it's true that having a posted speed limit is only a small part of the equation and that it sends a signal to drivers. But unless you're doing a lot of enforcement, it's very easy for them to ignore that. The same way that if you put a stop sign in a place that's not heavily used, or that people sometimes will start rolling it because they don't think it's important, you need to also have engineering that makes people want to drive slower. And there's a lot of ways of doing that, whether it's roundabouts instead of stop signs, making the road appear narrower through streetscaping, putting in protected bike lanes, of course, and bicycle highways, and trying to keep cars away from where you have cyclists and bicyclists. There's bicyclists and pedestrians. There's a lot of engineering work that we could do, but we have to put a focus on that. And what we've done in the past and what we've done to date, we put a priority on repaving roads without necessarily looking at upgrading them to make them safer. So that's one thing that we can do. We can look at the 85th percentile and stop forcing cities to raise speed limits. A lot of times you have cut through traffic because of different apps that are out there. People that are using Waze or Google Maps may not be familiar with the area. So they're going to rely on the posted speed limit, whether it's safe or not. Sometimes road conditions change and cities are not allowed to lower speed limits. If all of a sudden you have a nursing home or a school, or you put in a bike path, it could take them years to get where they can control speeds on that street. So you're inviting, again, a dangerous condition. Automated traffic enforcement is something that was recommended as well from the task force. And there are advocates in the police sphere who also believe in reducing the encounters between police and communities. So automated enforcement is something that we can take another look at. So there's a lot of different recommendations that were in the report, and we're trying to coalesce them now and see what we're going to move forward with this year.
You know, we kind of touched upon this on the beginning of the show, kind of your history and the film/TV, business. But that's, one of the major businesses of your district. I guess, how has that industry been affected during, COVID-19? And, how is it faring right now? Are people back to work? Are they producing content like normal? Or are they, scaling back and, struggling like some of these other businesses?
Well, for years, Hollywood was leading film productions to other states and other countries because of tax credits that they were given. And one of the ironies of COVID is that in the past few years, because of the film tax credit that the legislature had set up, the industry was really booming with productions. Universal Studios, part of which is in my district, was expanding their backlot. The studios, all of the lots were at capacity, if not over capacity, because the amount of productions happening in Los Angeles, and people were really back to work. And I can tell you, 5, 6, 7 years ago, that wasn't the case. A lot of my constituents, a lot of my friends and neighbors work in the industry, and they were either having to travel to other states, or in many cases, they weren't being offered work at all, particularly if they were below the line talent, because they were replaceable in other places that had developed their own production, production crews. So a lot of production had come back to Los Angeles. We were doing really well, and COVID shut everything down. And a lot of the people who work in the industry are not salaried employees. They are freelancers. So it was really, really frightening for them, especially in the early days of the CARES Act, where we didn't think that independent contractors were going to be able to necessarily have relief because they don't get traditional unemployment insurance. Right. So all of that was really very frightening for the community here and for Hollywood. I think it's getting a little bit better because they were able to access EDD money and CARES Act money, but the productions certainly haven't returned to any state of normalcy. People are very, very worried about what's going to happen. They don't know when they're going to get back to work and what that's going to look like. And they want to, of course, do it safely and not catch COVID themselves or spread it to their family members. So it's a very difficult time. I happen to see a list of areas that were hit hardest with COVID layoffs, and Hollywood in my area is one of the higher ones. We have more people here that have lost work or are out of work temporarily or even permanently because of COVID than many parts of the state, because we are very reliant on in-person film production. A lot of work that can't be done alone, can't be done at home. So that's going to be a challenge. I was able to do a bill last year to help a lot of our unionized workforce access their retirement benefits, to be able to draw that money down to use right now for emergency relief and then to pay it back without a penalty. We were able to do that last year, but that's only going to last so long. And a lot of people do want to be able to get back to work so they can put that money back into retirement and get back to supporting their families. And I just hope that we can give them the clear guidance so that we can get productions up and running.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned, you had a 7-year-old daughter. Can you kind of tell us kind of about how, sheltering in place has looked for you and kind of, distance learning with your 7-year-old and how you've been able to, balance that and kind of representing your district at the same time?
Well, I do think that it makes me understand what a lot of my district's going through and what a lot of working parents are going through. My husband's a landscape contractor, so he's out of the house every day pretty much, and he's on job sites. And last year when we were up in the legislature and my daughter was doing distance learning, he had to take her with him to go on jobs. So she was eating off the back of taco trucks and hanging out with his crew and sitting in the back of a pickup truck and trying to do distance learning when there was usually no internet connection. And it was really, really challenging. And I think a lot of people were going through that. And she learned a lot about irrigation, and right. She definitely got to see how hard people work when they do this kind of labor, but it was certainly not good for her academic performance. This year, it's been a little bit easier. The schools definitely have very quickly pivoted to distance learning. Here in my district in Glendale, I've been amazed at the quality of education that she's getting through distance learning. She has a lot of interactive Zooms every single day with her teacher, with a few of the other teachers. They've managed to keep her engaged in it. And so it's not the same as being in school, but I feel like they're doing an amazing job, you know, the teachers and the administration. I know that's not always the case for everybody everywhere.
Right.
It's possible. It shows that it's possible to have some amount of distance learning, but it doesn't replace being in the classroom. And it is difficult for working families. I don't have another adult who's home who can help her with her schoolwork. So that is certainly something that we've had to navigate and we'll continue to have to navigate.
No, very interesting. Something, you know, we've all struggled with. And, you know, I imagine, what was she in kindergarten at the time or first?
She was in first grade last year. This year she's in second grade. And while we're doing this interview, she's doing something in the kitchen and I'm not sure what, but I guess I'll find out soon.
Well, is she on Christmas break now though? So.
She is on Christmas break, so no school. That's so good. It's been, you know, it's a little bit harder. It's very hard to entertain a seven-year-old only child during COVID. Right. That is also a challenge. I've played a lot of Barbies. We were just playing coffee shop a few minutes ago, an ice cream shop.
Nice.
It's not optimal for her. I'm not another little kid. It's certainly not optimal for me. I've been doing this in between. I had about five Zooms today already. And she gets very frustrated when I have to say, no, mommy's got another Zoom now. I can't play. Go watch TV. You know, it's, I feel horrible about it, but you know, you kind of have to make the best of a bad situation. And yet I'm in such a better position than so many of my constituents. You know, we are able to put food on our table. We are able to, we have a roof over our heads. I'm not housing insecure right now. So, you know, I think about the people out there that are struggling with all of this, plus they don't know where the next paycheck is coming from. Thinking about $600 is not going to put food on their table and pay for their rent in Los Angeles. So I've got a lot of people that are struggling and suffering who never went through this before. We've had calls in our office from people who are looking for assistance with food, who have never used social services a day in their life. You know, people who were from the entertainment industry, who were freelancers, who were grips, who are makeup artists, senior citizens who say things to me like, I know you have people who are so worse off, but I'm scared to get on the bus to go and get food because I'm scared of getting COVID. What do I do? And our job has been to try to connect people with services. And we have an incredibly generous district. I did a toy and food drive this week. I had two staffers with me, or three staffers. And we thought that we'd be able to have enough stuff to throw in the back of one of the staffers' mother's pickup truck. Well, we got so many donations that we spent 3 or 4 hours just moving them to the office, back and forth and back and forth, filling up this truck over and over and over again. Wow. We had a line of cars coming in to drop off donations. People, we would open the trunk and they would say, we just went and bought you an entire trunk load of groceries. And these are not people who are rich looking. These are just ordinary people who really want to help. People said, you know, I normally go and visit my family and I can't this year. So I took that extra money and I bought donations to go to our homeless shelters and to go to people who can't buy a toy for their kids. And it was so moving, I can't even tell you. So we are struggling, people are struggling, but we also have a community that's incredibly generous. And I think that we're gonna get through this.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Cause you know, you hear so much of, you know, the deaths and the bad stuff. It's also great to hear, you know, people coming together and really that sense of community. And that's something, you know, we really don't see much of here on the news. So
yeah,
that's great. And thanks for doing that and helping your community out. It's great to see. one other issue we want to touch on real quick is, you know, there's announcements of vaccines coming out, kind of this light at the end of the tunnel. Kind of, I guess, what do you know about the vaccine rollout and kind of in your district and, you know, when people in your district and kind of the order that they'll be able to receive these vaccines and kind of, you know, the plan to implement, you know, bringing life back to normal here in 2021?
Well, I don't know any more than you all know from the governor's announcements. I haven't been given any secret information. I do really appreciate that they are trying to vaccinate people that are the most vulnerable, people who are frontline healthcare workers, people who are essential workers. And by essential, I'm hoping that that means our food service industry, our farm workers, our people who go into hospitals to clean them, to make people comfortable, all of those people that rely on to make our society work, and those who we know are most vulnerable to the disease, not just by virtue of their age, but by virtue of their ethnicity, their race, their socioeconomic status. And we know that some of our minority communities have been hit much worse than other communities. And we need to make sure that we protect those communities and prioritize them, because they have borne the brunt of the disease. They are often performing those essential services, sometimes having to deal with people who refuse to wear masks, who are yelling in their faces. And they should be the ones who are being protected first, given the work that they're doing and just the vulnerabilities that they're facing. So I hope that that's happening, and it looks like that's the plan. And I hope that people take the vaccine. I've been trying to educate myself about it. I learned just last night some things I didn't know. For instance, I didn't know that the vaccine doesn't keep you from getting the virus. People will be infected with the virus exactly the same, at pretty much the same rate, whether they have the vaccine or not. What the virus does is it keeps you from getting the bad symptoms from the virus. And why that's important is because what it means is that once you have the vaccine, you can't stop wearing a mask. You can't assume that you're not a spreader of the virus. In fact, you may even be more of a spreader, because if you have symptoms, you may be asymptomatic if you are infected.
Right.
So you have to be very, very careful, even if you've been vaccinated, so that you don't spread the virus either to people who haven't been vaccinated yet or who can't be vaccinated because of other health conditions. So we need to get as many people vaccinated as we can, but we're not going to be able to let our guard down. Right. Also, reinfections, it seems, just like with the common cold, are going to be very common with this virus. So we'll probably have to be vaccinated year after year. And even if with the vaccine, some people will still have some symptoms, just like with the influenza vaccine and other vaccines. So it's not going to be a panacea. It's not going to end this right now. But it's such great news to have something that will be highly protective for people. And I just can't wait to I wish we could flash forward 4 or 5 months from now when we all have the vaccine. You know, I'm going to be on an airplane myself starting on January 11th. I don't want to get vaccinated until those who are more vulnerable get the vaccine. So I just hope that people continue to take precautions, wear masks, maybe two, and do practice social distancing. Don't go to parties. Don't mix. Don't have a Christmas party. Just be safe.
Yes, please. Please don't go to any Christmas parties or gather.
No.
Definitely well said. Well, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners before you have to go?
Jess, I know it's been a really, really, really difficult 2020, and I hope that 2021 will be better and that we can all look for those silver linings, those kindnesses, that we can all continue to be nice to each other, that we can be patient, maybe more patient than we've ever been in our lives and more selfless than we've ever been in our lives, because that's what we're going to need to get through all of this.
Definitely. Well put.
And thank you so much. Thanks for having me here. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you, and have a happy new year.
You too. Hey, take care. Bye.